hello there. Thank you for coming.
Who are you?
Who are you? Yeah, I was about to ask exactly the same thing.
I think we've done this joke before, haven't we?
Probably have, yeah, but, you know, it's not like us to be an original, because it's Tom Matt Attack. There, Tom.
Yeah,
how are you doing?
Thanks for the tea.
It's all right. I got one as well. It's in a it's in a Welsh mug. My sister-in-law to be actually came up to me this morning and said, "Matthew, is this your mug?" Said
the
I couldn't
with
tell.
The big Welsh
with the one with the big Welsh dragon. And I said, "No, I've never seen it before in my life." But how are you doing, Thomas? You've been close to this big Welsh dragon because you've been back in the UK for 2 weeks.
Yeah, not so close to the dragon, but closer than you.
Yeah, I
mean... the other side of the world, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I have been literally over the other side of the world.
I guess my trip to the UK isn't quite as exciting as your trip to Japan.
I don't know, Tom. But, you tell me.
Well, I saw Kiss, which was pretty darn exciting.
Kiss is pretty good, yeah.
I also saw Metronomy, which were good.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you've seen a Kiss show...
Oh, exactly. I mean, when there's fireworks and people spewing flames, then...
There was everything.
Yeah.
Everything you could expect. It was a wonderful, wonderful time. Yeah.
Did Metronomy seem a bit monotonous in comparison?
No, not monotonous, I wouldn't say. It's just, you know, they just come up and they do the songs. It's not like showmanship. You know, they do the songs and they say a couple of things. And the songs are great and they sounded great.
Yeah.
But, come on.
So there was no point in which the band members cycled around the stage to make sure you could take a picture of them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you, in comparison, you know. But I enjoyed both gigs. But
yeah.
Kiss was like, oh, I have to pinch myself sometimes. When I think about it, I was that close to them. It was. I keep going on about Kiss. I've already told you all this off the...
You have, but it's okay. Your enthusiasm has not wavered.
Yeah.
You are...
So a lovely time in the UK. Seeing family and friends and just, yeah, I could live that life. Not having to think about going into work or the daily grind, just kind of going out and having fun and wow.
Just being a free Tom Parry.
Yeah. I've enjoyed the freedom. How about you?
I very much enjoyed the freedom. I enjoyed the courteous people. I enjoyed the very nice food.
And you mentioned it, the politeness, the cleanness.
The politeness. You would generally see people outside hotels picking up litter in very nice suits, which is a bit of a weird thing to see.
Getting suited for picking up the litter.
Yeah, and all the food was amazing and relatively cheap in comparison to the food that we would eat out here.
In Denmark, we're in Denmark, now.
Yeah. I loved it, honestly. It was one of the first times in my life I was like, wow, I could really probably live here. And I mean, obviously, like, I was
I'm glad you liked it
weeks.
That much and you weren't disappointed by it.
No, I think it would have been hard to be disappointed with it, to be honest with you. I mean,
yeah.
Fortunately,
because there's a vision you get of something, isn't there? You see this on television or whatever and you say, oh, wow, Japan, that's a place to go.
Yeah.
But it didn't disappoint. That's great.
Well, it was kind of weird, to be honest with you, because, I mean, I'd literally just come off the back. I completed Persona 5,
whoa,
so that was done before I went.
Sorry.
And... very odd to like see that stylized version of Japan and this places. And I went to Shibuya and I went to Akihabara and all these places you go to in the game. And they were pretty accurately represented.
Yeah.
Like I walked across Shibuya Crossing and it was like, yeah, okay, cool. I kind of know where I am, weirdly enough. And, you know, like even seeing like 80s anime and, you know, how it's all like super futuristic everywhere. And then you've got these shrines that have monsters in them in the middle of the city. It's just like, yeah, well, it's because there's Shinto and Buddhist shrines that look completely out of place in this huge sprawling metropolis that are around them. And there's just this small Shinto shrine, like a small area with like lion statues and fox statues and stuff. It's super cool. I really enjoyed my time there.
So it was like all the video games you've been playing, like Shenmue or like,
yeah,
Yakuza.
Well, we stayed in Shinjuku, which is essentially an area populated with CD bars and love hotels.
Uh-huh.
And even that felt safe, which is a really weird thing to say. And so, yeah, I actually saw a Yakuza Street Brawl, which is a bit weird. And yeah, there was stuff going on, and yeah, it all seemed perfectly fine. I wasn't called Gaijin, which is like white devil, is the term, or it means like foreigner and whatever. Hmm. But
everyone treated you with respect and applied yeah, to you. And
everyone was cool. Like, it was really nice. Like, anywhere we went, my headphones broke, so I took them back to the Bang & Olufsen store in Tokyo to try and explain this issue. My headphone was locking up. And typically, as soon as I sat down to talk with the woman, the headphones started working again and operating properly. I was like, oh, God damn it. And so she, through the limited understanding of my English and her speaking Japanese and me, I was trying to show her the issue.
Yeah.
And she was super courteous and she was super nice and she was trying to figure out what it was, even though it was clearly fine now when I was saying hi, which is yes, like it's okay, and doing this, the hand symbols. I learned thumbs up in Japan doesn't mean thumbs up. It means no.
It means no?
Yeah. So I would say, like, I would give a thumbs up when there was a language barrier, and then people would try and put stuff back in the cabinet. So I'd be like, no. So I then just do the okay finger. Yeah, and generally I spent a lot of time between seeing sights and doing things and eating really nice food, buying a lot of video games. Because, yeah, believe it or not, all of this talk about Japan and video games, a lot of people buy video games there, Tom.
Do they?
Yeah.
Funny.
Weird that. no, it was very weird, actually. Like, to think the country's got like 100 million people population. And you see the amount of consumer goods that are targeting those people and the amount of people who are buying toys and then reselling toys. Mm. So there's a massive second hand market for everything. There's actually a place in Akihabara we went to, and they were like cubes, so you could rent the cube out and put your figures and stuff in it to resell your figures after you were done looking at them or you got your figures.
I like that idea. And I think I've looked at these enough now.
Yeah, it was really strange. It was just like, okay, cool. So you'd see a Super Game Boy next to, like, I don't know, some old manga or whatever, just because people were like, okay, cool, I'll get rid of this now. I'll throw it in this cube and sell it off.
Well, it's not so dissimilar than the idea of markets where you buy.
No, definitely not, but I mean, they had flea markets as well. We went to one or two of them just because they happened to be where we were. Like, we went to the Tokyo Station and Ginza and things, and they were just like antique markets on the streets. And it was very similar, a shopping experience to going to a flea market anywhere else in the world, except the prices were ridiculous. Like, there's one stall with a... Well, actually, I mean, not ridiculous, but...
There were more than you would normally get.
1,000 yen seems like a lot of money, but then it's actually like £8.
Okay.
But it was a Han Solo figure for 1,000 yen, like a vintage Star Wars Kenner one from Empire Strikes Back. And I was like, I'm not paying you that.
I bought something, a car boot sale.
Did you
in
really?
Crewe.
Oh, really?
They're so much fun, because this one in Crewe was really like everything, bits and pieces, big electronics bucket that I was going through. And I found a Sidewinder pad, Microsoft Sidewinder pad, for the very good condition.
Yeah.
And I was only thinking the other day, I was playing Sonic & Knuckles on the keyboard, and I was like, oh, I could do with a controller. And so, yeah, I bought this. Very cool. Great pad.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's transparent plastic.
Yeah.
It's got the triggers on the analog, of course, mm-hmm. but four buttons, USB. Yeah, really nice. And it was £1, you know. How much that? £1, you know.
It's all right.
I thought that was okay.
That's the thing, you know, like, British car boot sales are undoubtedly the best car boot sales.
Yeah, is it forage? Foraging is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you get that in Danish car boot sales, but a lot of the time things are very expensive or people know what things are worth.
Mm.
And so you will get the person who, when you pick up a Donkey Kong game and watch, you will go like, oh, how much is this? And they'll be like, oh, it's 800 kroner on eBay. And I'd be like, cool, sell it on eBay then.
Tut, tut, tut.
Indeedy. But it's all right. It was good. What?
Did you buy any new games in Japan?
Oh, what? New games?
Like new releases.
I bought 3 games from a Switch.
You did?
I bought I'm Setsuna for my Nintendo Switch.
Because it's got an English language.
It's completely in English.
Oof.
I bought The Secret of Mana Collection, which has absolutely no English, but I've beaten those first 2 games enough times to know what the story is, and I've only ever beaten the third one in Japanese.
I didn't know that was out on the Switch.
Only in Japan. It literally came out the day before I was leaving, and I managed to convince a store that will remain nameless to break street date for me.
Wow.
Because I was saying, like, look, I fly in the morning, I really want this.
Like, oh... Wow.
And the guy, like, talked with the manager, he's like, yeah. He goes, there's no price sticker on it. Don't tell anyone where you bought it from. I was like, cool, thank you.
Nice.
I mean, they had it on shelf as like a pre-order thing, and the guy was like, "Oh, you can't buy this today."
Mm.
He's like, "Oh,
you pleaded."
Crossed his hands, like, "No." I was like, "Flying tomorrow." I showed him my boarding pass at the time, and then another guy came out who could speak English and was like, "Oh, just don't tell anyone where you bought it from." So that was awesome. I also got Spelunker. There's a new version of Spelunker, not Spelunky, not to be confused with that. Which is a four-player co-op Switch game.
Yeah.
I believe it's also on the PS4 in Japan, but there it's free to play and you have to buy things here. Yes. On the Switch, you can just play it to your heart's content.
Huh.
It's aimed at kids, so the language barrier won't be that difficult either.
Do they have manuals in Japan?
Does
a new game come with an instruction manual?
I Am Setsuna had a flyer that was like a 2 or 3 page flyer. You know what I mean? Like it was more like a leaflet than a manual.
Because, you know, I bought a few Blu-rays when I was back in the UK. A few like Arrow Video ones, you know, when they re-release a classic film like Reanimate or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, they come with a lovely, nice book.
Yeah.
Right, a little leaflet, and it tell you all about the film and notes and pictures in. And I thought, well, why can't that happen with video games? Well, why can't sometimes a game come out with a manual? Why is it like, mostly, I think, across the board, nothing has a manual? Whereas with Blu-rays, you know, dependent on who's distributing it or whatever, they might slip a manual
price
in.
Price is the argument.
But what
I
makes
time
it
time
different
again.
Between games and Blu-rays?
Like, if you think about video games, and you think that a video game has generally been about 50-60 quid max for the last 30 years.
Because they're more expensive.
Like, they are more expensive to produce, they are more expensive to make and manufacture now, obviously, with inflation. And yet the price hasn't gone up.
But
which
they used
is
to
not
have manuals
true
in
of
with games.
Absolutely anything else.
I think, okay, special editions, I think, should come with manuals.
I would agree with that.
They mostly don't,
no,
in
they
my
don't.
Experience.
No.
I think that is a crime.
I don't even think like Limited Run come with manuals, right? I think it's just a game in a box.
Because, you know, often
it's my game in a box.
Be playing a new video game and being sure of something. And it's so nice to be able to look in the manual and go, oh, right, okay.
A lot of the time, though, they do have digital manuals. I know. It was actually a case where I was playing I Am Setsuna, and I would just, to be honest with you, like, most people are probably doing what I did, just Googled what are fluxes or what is this? How do I use this meter?
Yeah, but I just prefer not having to.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, to be honest with you, with I Am Setsuna, I played it on the plane home, so I didn't even have the luxury of Googling. I pretty much beat that game in one sitting because I was on a 10.5 hour flight. And then I just mopped up the last bits of it when we were home then on Saturday, just because I was too vegetated to do anything else. Yeah, and it didn't have a manual. I was trying to figure out how to access the digital manual, but that didn't really seem to be straightforward, even if there was one.
And
so
even
like,
that might be in Japanese.
Potentially. I mean, the game was in English, and I mean, it is released on the Nintendo eShop in English, so I assume there is an English manual as well. But yeah, it didn't want to give me the option.
Just something I was thinking of recently. I mentioned that on the podcast because I didn't understand quite the logic behind why, you know, they can do it in a Blu-ray, but it never happens in video games anymore.
I think Blu-ray is probably a different proposition,
but
though,
it's
right?
rare, like, you know, it does depend on what the Blu-ray release is. If it's a Criterion Collection Blu-ray or something like this, you know, high end, you know.
And I think that's because that's the expectation, right? Is that you can buy a Blade Runner, for example, you can get that for like a fiver on Blu-ray now, or you can buy the nice box set that comes with a replica gun model or something, and then it will come with books and it will come with soundtracks maybe. And
the one I got
commentary
for Claire came with one of the vehicles. The
I remember
cars.
The car.
Yeah. Watch Blade Runner when I was back in the UK again.
I really want to watch Blade Runner again.
Is it because the new one's coming out?
No, just because
that's why I thought, oh, I'll watch it again. And I love it more than ever now.
I really,
you know, that viewing movie of Blade Runner was like, and I love the subtlety of Harrison Ford's performance in it.
Yeah,
you know, as well. It's like, wow, that's a great moment in his career, especially at the time. He's doing so many great things.
Man can act, Tom. You know, that's how he goes.
And it's obviously it's not just him.
It's
everything about that film. You know, all the actors, all the music and the atmosphere and the visual. Anyway, we're talking about video games.
We are, yeah. But yeah, I bought those three. That, to my knowledge, the other two didn't come with manuals, but I haven't opened them yet, okay. So I can't tell you.
That's my manual rant over then.
Yeah, you're on manual overdrive. There's... What else? No, I think that was it. I think that was it for new games. I think I just bought some stuff on Switch.
Bought some retro stuff, Game Boy games.
I bought tons of retro things. Right, okay. So highlights are... I bought.
Have to do highlights because there's so many.
Yeah, I bought a Spice Orange GameCube for about £1. I have no idea if it works. I will figure that out later. Bought a Box PC Engine for about £15. I bought about 40 Game Boy games in total. Puyokan, Petra Dragoon, and a Japanese version of Moomin's Tale, which has a... The European release of Moomin's Tale is perhaps the rarest Game Boy Color game you can get. I have a box copy of it because, alas, no one gave a shit about Game Boy Color games 2 or 3 years ago, and now they're slowly starting to rise in value as well. But Moomin's Tale is essentially a pretty bare-bones, very easy platformer in the West. In the Japanese original release, because Moomins are huge in Japan, Moomins and Snoopy are big like you would not believe in Japan. There are actual cafes and shops dedicated to both Peanuts and Moomins. In a way that I can't describe. Lots and lots of merchandise.
Well, I understand. I understand that. I mean, even the Moomins anime series was done in Japan, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. But the Japanese version of the game is actually an adventure game, and the platforming is kind of secondary to it. Oh. And so they couldn't be asked to translate any of that, so they just took it all out and just left you the platform and stuff.
That must be interesting.
But it just feels like a very bare-bones game in comparison to like this very rich and very well-animated Japanese effort. And I checked the YouTube videos, and I was like, okay, that's going to be one I'm going to look for. Got Donkey Kong Country 3 Game Boy Color Port, which is only released in Japan. I bought a gold Game Boy Light because it was under £20. I bought a Gundam Wing Memorial Game Boy Advance SP because it was about a tenner.
Yeah, I was wondering if you bought any special edition consoles out there.
I was going to buy a glow-in-the-dark Imagineer Game Boy, and then I realised, no, I do not want to spend £200 on a Game Boy. That's ridiculous. I would rather have a good time and buy a lot of nice stuff instead. I bought a Wonder Swan. I have a Wonder Swan now.
Wonderful.
I bought a Final Fantasy Wonder Swan because it was actually cheaper than buying an unboxed Wonder Swan in most places. I bought a copy of Clock Tower with that.
On the Wonder Swan,
which is a remake of the first game on the Super Famicom because the Super Famicom game was about £40-50. Unfortunately, it seems that a lot of boxed Super Famicom and boxed Famicom stuff has risen exponentially in Japan. As was the case with Astro Superstars, the Saturn game you asked me to look for.
Yes.
It's about £300-400 for a complete copy with the spine card. And then
I think the first one, the one that you showed me.
The one I showed
100...
you was about £90.
Yeah, it was.
But it didn't have the spine card. The one that I sold before that did. And it was incredibly pricey because of it. Yeah,
I knew it was an expensive game.
It was an expensive game. You didn't know it was
expensive.
I didn't know it was still expensive
in Japan. I always get this idea that, obviously, when you buy something imported, it's going to cost a lot more than getting it direct from the source.
See, the thing is, a lot of games that I saw, that was the case. Because there are a million copies of Dragon Quest, because there are a million copies of Final Fantasy. They are still cheap in Japan. I bought a box copy of Final Fantasy VI for just over a fiver.
Yeah.
Like, in immaculate condition. I got it because I ended up going to the Square Enix cafe. Because I went to the Square Enix to the Capcom cafe.
Oh, nice.
I got a Magitek armor that was super stylized and looked really cute, like World of Final Fantasy. And I was like, you know what? I really like Final Fantasy VI. I'd like to own that boxed in a Japanese box because I love that art of terror on the Magitek armor on the front. So I picked it up because it was cheap. Bought a copy of Dragon Quest for the Famicom for like £1. I bought a copy of Final Fantasy for the Famicom for about £1. And those games are about £30-40 on eBay. Just because someone's gone, cool, I can go to Japan, buy these up, and then sell them on eBay and make a massive profit on them. So my advice to you people is don't buy Japanese games. Save the money. Just go to fucking Japan. Like, I think of Puyokan and Petra Dragoon. Both about £100-150 Game Boy cards.
If it's an expensive one, then
I paid a tenner, like at the most, for all of my Game Boy games.
Yeah, I would say that's the way to go myself. I have bought a few very recently myself, actually, from Japan, but they weren't very expensive. I got the Go Whackman Game Boy game.
Yeah.
Which, have you played that?
I have not played the Game Boy Game version.
Because it's totally different. It's like a top-down, it's like Pac-Man.
Yeah, it is.
You collect the ghosts or spirits and have to avoid the angels.
Yeah. It was one of the games I was actually on the lookout for in Japan that I didn't get. I didn't get...
got it for about a fiver online.
It's not a bad price. You know?
So that you can get cheap Japanese games, but there are certain titles, as you mentioned, which is like so stupid expensive online.
I couldn't find a copy of Banishing Racer. Banishing Racer is a game by Jalico that's a side-scrolling platformer in which you play as a car. Banishing Racer was completely unheard of about 2 or 3 years ago, and copies would show up for about a 5 or 6 quid, and I was like, I should buy that.
Mm.
And it's now going for like 280 quid because someone posted a YouTube video and declared it rare. It's not rare. Like...
Mm. Well, but there the is that is, nowadays as well, isn't there?
As soon as someone says it's fucking rare, that has a couple of thousand people following them, the price shoots up. And it's just like, why? It just doesn't make any sense. And especially when then you go to Japan and like, Zaz, Chicken Gun Zaz, the Game Boy game I've talked about a couple of times in this podcast, it is genuinely a very rare Game Boy game.
Mm-hmm.
eBay copy will set you back 400 quid. Like, fortunately, the copy I have didn't cost me anywhere near that ballpark, but it was expensive. And then, like, you can get it in Japan for about 50, 60 quid, because that's the Game Boy market there, because people aren't insane. People have realized, like, you know, these shops are going, okay, this is a very expensive thing, and yes, there are people like myself who then go in there and then buying everything up.
Mm.
But I'm not the scumbag who's then coming back and then trying to sell it. And go, cool, yeah, let's mark this up 50 times what I paid for it, which is a box copy of Final Fantasy VI these days. It's annoying. It really annoys me that there's such a price difference.
Yeah.
And then obviously, like, because that happens, the stores then generally reflect that, which is why Astro Superstars was so expensive.
But there's more than one.
There is
way to play Astro Superstars.
There is, Tom Parry.
Which isn't a game about driving Astras.
Unfortunately, it is not. Right.
That's a crinkly bag there.
I apologise for this crinkly bag from Kiddie Land. Tom Parry, here is your copy of Astro Superstars on the Neo Geo collection for the PlayStation 2.
Oh, Sunsoft.
It is a Sunsoft collection. I had to ask for it. It was in a cabinet.
Thank you.
One of the more high-priced PlayStation 2 games, I think you will find.
I looked this up. Was it like 50 quid or something?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
But I mean... eBay copies were like £70-80, you were saying, like, for this. And obviously, because I was in Japan, I got you a gift.
Yeah.
Now, Tom Parry, I know you said to me, hey, I have a complete Lemmings collection, I have a complete Worms collection. Maybe it would be nice to own one of those games.
Oh, yeah, you did say that.
But Tom Parry, you overlook a very, very little fact that you also own a complete collection of another reputable gaming franchise. I know
I don't know.
A lover of the fighting game genre.
Oh, I love that genre.
You do. Yes. And so I got you a copy of the best fighting game ever made in Japanese.
Not Shaq Fu.
No, Tom Parry. It's Zero Divide.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
Oh, that's okay. And then your actual gift is...
Oh, wow. It is.
I know you bought it on the PlayStation 2, but I thought, you should get it on the GameCube. It's Ribbit King.
Oh, I love Ribbit King.
I know.
Did you see I featured this?
I did not, no.
Thank you.
It's okay.
I said thank you on the back. Not the last episode of Paris Pickups, but the one before that, I talked to and said great things about this game. This game is wonderful. You've played
amazing.
It before.
I have played Ribbit King, yeah.
Such a great idea to change up the idea of golf.
Yes.
Isn't it?
It is.
You know, and why not put frogs in it? Frolf, they call it.
Frolf, yeah.
Or Kiroff here in the Japanese version. I think that's Frolf in the... Yeah. Oh, wow. Don't know what to say. Thank you.
It's all right. Don't worry. I know you obviously...
I guess that's not so expensive in Japan.
No. Believe it or not. But I mean, Zero Divide. I saw it, Tom Parry.
Yeah, Zero Divide.
Wow. I was just like, ooh la la. Tom Parry needs to have the greatest fighting game in the world in his collection.
We've mentioned this before on the podcast.
We have. Unfortunately, I could not find you a copy of Zero Divide 2. Otherwise, I would have got that instead.
Oh, well.
But there you go. you have a Japanese copy of Zero Divide. One day you will have a Japanese copy of Zero Divide 2, perhaps. Thank you. And then you will have the complete Zero Divide collection.
Well, I ain't got any US copies of Zero Divide.
Oh, Tom, there's time. Don't worry.
Oh, that's super duper.
Yeah, so you buy anything else, Tom Barry?
Did I buy anything? Yeah. Well, yes, I have. Bought a few games, bought a few Wii games, bought a few PS2 games, bought a few Xbox. Nothing really to write home about. I mean, if you check out Parry's Pickups on Blast Process, the YouTube channel, then you'll see these games. I did some Japanese games, actually, funnily enough.
Oh, really?
Other than Go-Go Atman, I picked up Muscle Bomber, which is the wrestling game known as Saturday Night Slam Masters in the US.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yep. And
do you get that for the Super Famicom?
Yeah,
or the
Super Famicom. Okay. It's on Mega Drive.
It's on Mega Drive, yeah.
And one more, something, Blade Masters. I don't know, something like that.
Okay.
It's some sort of fighting game. I got the wrestling one, based on Ultimate Muscle.
Yes.
As well.
I saw some Ultimate Muscle games, and I was like, should I get those for you or shouldn't I? And I wasn't sure if you had them, so I didn't.
Yeah. And all these games are very affordable, very cheap. So I got them. If we're talking imports, as we are, I've been enjoying the Retro Duo Portable, which, again, if you head over to the Blast Process YouTube, you can see a full, nearly half-hour feature on said portable console.
Ooh la la.
And I'll just keep it short here, but it's well worth getting. It does a lot, and you think it maybe just plays Super Nintendo games. Well, of course, it plays NES games and Mega Drive games and Master System games with the converter. But when you get to that point, it's getting very tall.
Yes.
Coming out so it's not so portable anymore. But it's great, the ability to plug in Super Nintendo controllers. Really nice. The screen is really good.
Yeah.
Don't expect HD, though. It is not that high resolution.
Yeah, yeah.
But nice and bright. People have said the sound's not so loud on it. No problems with the sound, personally. I think it's loud enough, definitely.
I think, to be honest with you, with the sound, I mean, it was the same with that, the thing you got to plug into the top of your Super Nintendo that played NES games.
Oh, yeah.
I think in large batch productions that are produced in China, like these things are, you get a varying degree of quality.
The speakers aren't the best speakers in the world. You can plug in your headphones, though.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fine. So I would recommend this wholeheartedly. If I mean, why not? Why would you not want to play Super Nintendo games on the go?
No, exactly.
Especially when you can play practically every region. There is something, though, that you should bear in mind before you pick one of these up. If you've got a collection of first-party Nintendo games you want to play on it that are PAL region, this thing is NTSC region, and games like Donkey Kong Country or Super Mario All-Stars will not play on it, the PAL.
Ooh.
It is some sort of Nintendo security, you know, around this, and it recognizes the device you're playing on it as an American system, and it does say if you're using an adapter to play this as well, this may damage your cartridge, and also it's very intense security on most. Starwing doesn't have it.
Yeah.
And Starwing plays sort of. You get a bit of a bar through the screen where you can't see behind it.
Yeah.
So there's a dead space on the screen. So if you move across that, then everything goes behind that disappears. Quite difficult to explain, but if you check out the video, you can see it there.
Okay, that sucks.
I would not let those things put you off getting one, though, if it does sound interesting to
appealing
you.
Appealing to you.
Yeah. It's better than the Superboy, which is the alternative.
Yeah.
Whereas apparently that has much louder sound and better speakers, it does stretch the ratio of the screen. So you don't want squished games, especially spending £95 on a console, which that one is at retail. I got my Retro Duo Portable for £85, which I'm happy with.
You could, obviously, there are dubious legality means of playing these. There's some third-party Chinese machines that play ROMs that you can play on the go that are HD.
Of course there are. Yeah, there are other options. This is fun because it's
using the actual cartridges.
Using the actual cartridges. And I mean, in hardware emulation, I guess.
It's more so than perhaps, say, the Retro Freak or even the Retron 5, because they have...
Rip the ROMs.
They rip the ROMs from your cartridges, which is the one thing that actually stopped me. I saw a lot of Retro Freaks while I was in Japan.
Yeah.
And that's a very nice system. It plays absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm.
but it's not the original hardware, and so you will get screw ups and you will get things that don't work properly. Yeah. And I was like, well, the whole point of me wanting these cartridges, and it's the reason I ended up buying a PC Engine, is because I was like, well, this is cheap enough, this is fine, I can plug this in and it'll all work and it'll all be good. Mm. And even though the PC Engine I got was battered, it still powers on fine. Like, mm-hmm. built like a tank, those things are.
Mm.
So I look forward to playing some of those games. I didn't really pick up much. I literally picked up a shooter called Deep Blue and some other game, and then everyone was like, these are literally the two worst shooters ever made. I was like, I don't care. They cost £2.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit? I'll try them out.
Very nice.
Indeedy. Also picked up all the Yakuza games as well that I...
For collecting purposes.
Well, hopefully I intend to play them one day. I picked up the two set in feudal Japan. Mm. I picked up the two PSP spin-off games. And I also got a copy of Yakuza 5 because they never released it physically here. That one was collection purposes. The others I hope to actually play, hopefully, one day.
Okay, because there's no other way of playing those ones.
There are currently no way of playing them. Well, hopefully, let's see. I mean, Yakuza 0 seemed to do good numbers. Let's hope the remake of the first game that they're releasing in September also does very well, and then hopefully there'll be some revitalized interest in the series.
Speaking of Yakuza 0, I've been playing that.
Yeah.
Because I got this a while ago. Had delivered to the UK. I've only just been able to collect it and play it the other day. Nice first impressions. This is actually my first proper experience with a Yakuza game. I briefly played the first one.
Yeah.
But yeah, really nice. Although, you know, it reminded me that it is a lack of gameplay, at least at the beginning. But that is no different than a game that I absolutely adore called Shenmue. So really, I was engaged in the story. I like the characterizations.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to playing more of that. As I am, this is going to come as a shock to you, Matthew, but I'm playing Persona 4.
No fucking way.
Oh, yes. And even though that game has no gameplay in it yet, and I've been playing it for about an hour or more, it was a playing journey. I was gripped by the story and the characters. There you go. I felt it was nice that it wasn't your typical RPG fare because... You know, there's always a crystal and a princess and the fantasy-based RPGs. The fact that this is based within reality, but with a twist, obviously it's got a sort of paranormal, surreal world contained within, and weird things happen, and I guess in a similar way to a show like Twin Peaks, you know.
Yeah.
It's reality, but it's sort of twisted.
Yeah.
And the characterizations, I thought, were also very good. And I like the story and I like the mystery about it.
Yep.
I like the humour as well. The idea that if he wants to fit inside the TV, he's going to need a bigger TV.
Yeah.
You know, that was a funny joke. I hope that's not a spoiler for anybody.
I think
it's
you're
fine.
It's
a very old game. But I'm playing it on the Vita, and I like it, I have to admit. And, you know, the only reason I want to play it, it's not for the gameplay, because as I said, all I've been doing is pressing a button. There was a sort of tutorial on the combat system at the very beginning, but there wasn't much of one, and it didn't show that much depth in that combat system. I don't know if eventually you learn more and it becomes more interesting.
Yes, it does. They're very good at spoon-feeding you how the combat works in
those
games.
Okay, cool. But I want to come back to it for the story. And it's unusual that you find, I think, games like that where the story is what you play for.
It is.
Deadly Premonition. Started playing that again.
Yeah.
Again, another game where you want to play it for the story.
Yes.
Gameplay is okay. Little ropey. Visuals, ropey. Sound, ropey. Ideas, writing, vision.
Yeah.
Music. It's all spot on.
See, for me, like, Deadly Premonition is a game where I played a lot of it, and the difficulty gets very high about halfway through, because the game is so janky to control. The tank controls aren't very good to engage with. Persona 4 is an incredibly polished game.
Yeah, yeah. I won't draw that comparison.
And it is just so playable. And it's the same with Persona 5. I've beaten that, so I'll talk a little bit about that game. I don't think it is as good as Persona 4.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't like to directly compare them, but I'm just saying from a gameplay stance...
Yeah.
That's not the reason I'm playing any of these games. I'm playing them because I want to see what happens next. But at least Deadly Premonition does have some sort of third-person shooting in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With those guys that go, don't want to die.
Oh, yeah.
You know what?
Man,
Claire found that right. She told me to turn the sound off.
Yeah.
But then she kept saying it afterwards because she quite enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But it was like, they say it a lot.
They do. I'm not comparing those two. That's comparing apples and oranges. I'm saying Persona 5 to Persona 4.
Oh, I think. Sorry.
It's okay. I think Persona 4 is the better game. I very much enjoyed my time with Persona 5. I beat it in about 80-odd hours.
Tell you something I like about Persona 4. I'm interested if it happens in Persona 5 as well. Is sometimes when you make a decision to say something, and depending on what you say, it increases a stat. Like, the teacher was being horrible to me and calling me a loser. So rather than just, you know, go along with it, I said, oh, you don't call me a loser.
Yeah.
And I got confidence.
Yeah.
And I found that was interesting because the reason why I don't play a lot of RPGs is I feel they're a very linear progression. And whatever you do, you're always going to end up in the same space.
Yeah.
You know, there's no sort of... You can't really play it in your own way. Whereas I felt that these little things, these little decisions I was making, was tailoring the experience to me slightly in some way at least, which actually was interesting to me.
And they will... As you progress through that game, you will unlock more confidence and you will get more people in your party. And you will realize, because that calendar is ticking along, you have very limited time.
Mm.
And so you will spend time with the characters you most like and you will learn things about people and you will you will grow your bonds with them. And then you will have to build your social links. So things like, is it guts, intelligence, charm... And then two other stats, proficiency and something else. I can't remember what the fifth one is.
Mm.
Kindness. You will build these things. And then, depending on what you've built, you'll be able to interact with different characters in different ways and build up social links and stuff. That's Persona 5, at least. But you will need these things in Persona 4 to do things. Like, if you build up your knowledge, obviously you'll get better results in the school tests and your... what's the relationship of the guy with the kid? Is he your uncle
or
something?
Uncle. Yeah.
Like, your uncle will respond to you in different ways based on how you're doing at school, and then different characters will feel different ways of you based on... And it will completely change the interaction.
Yeah.
So much so that I know people who are absolutely in love with Persona 4 who've played it through like 5 or 6 times, and that is a very long game to play through 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, how long are we talking, Matthew? Am I going to finish?
I don't know if you will, Tom Parry. in all honesty, how much you play video games compared to how long this game is, I think this game could probably last you a good 6 years.
Oh, great. That's nice. One day.
It was... I don't know. I mean, I think the story will not let up. I think if you've enjoyed the first hour of it, you will continue to enjoy that game all the way through.
Mm.
I never beat it because I stopped... using my Vita.
I
got about 45 hours into about a 60-hour game. I should really go back and finish it because I still remember everything very vividly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you could do it. I think it wouldn't be that much of a stretch for you.
And I was really happy with the price I got it for because I downloaded it for about £3 or something. And Mike gave me a memory card. Because I didn't have any room on my memory card for it.
Yeah.
So he gave me a 4 gig one.
Yeah.
That he had.
That's good.
Oh, great. Cheers. Nice so it cost me about £4 for Persona 4.
Yeah.
So I think that's good value for
money.
It's
definitely good value for money. I mean, it's the reason I bought a Vita was I wanted to play that game. So it's all good in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
But Persona 5, not as good as Persona 4. I think gameplay-wise, it is just as tight. I really like a lot of the side characters a lot more than I like the main cast of that game.
Mm,
I think they have a lot more interesting stories because the people who are in your crew are teenagers and they've had things that have affected their lives, and that's why they want to become a Phantom Thief with this organization of people who want to like step on the people who are stepping to them. And it's very interesting because apparently this whole game is... very much a comment on Japanese society right now.
Mm.
And how apparently a lot of people feel, and this is going off Kotaku articles, which are written about like the real life ramifications of Persona 5, saying that apparently like in Japan at the moment, a lot of the culture is based around people being told what to do. And a lot of that means that there are people who have risen politically or in schools and things. And a lot of the... the antagonists of Persona 5 are actually based on real people and real things that have happened in Japan over the last 10, 15 years. And people who are abusing their authority to get their own means rather than for the good of society, which is kind of against what Japan is all about.
Yeah.
And then these kids are kind of being trampled on as a result of that, and just kind of a comment on how Japan society is more focused towards the aging population because 60% of their population is growing in age and everyone's becoming more conservative as that, and the kids are kind of suffering because of it. And so it's not as lighthearted as Persona 4. It's very grim, it's very gritty, it's definitely the gritty reboot of Persona. There are some goofy moments, but they don't really land as well as they do in Persona 4.
Yeah, it has definitely got a comedic flavour from the beginning. I enjoyed the character with the girl with the green...
Chie.
Yeah, that's the name.
Yeah.
Could not remember if it was Chie or Chie. No. Yeah. And she's funny. I think she's probably the most likeable, the one you latch on to,
because
she's fun.
Yes.
And a little bit different than your average girl character in these sort of games. Because you have got that other girl, the mysterious girl whose parents run the inn.
Oh, I've forgotten her name.
She's the only other female.
She wears a red sweater.
One. Yeah, yeah. And then you've got the kind of clumsy guy.
Yeah. Who's a bit of a dick. I can't remember his... I can't remember the characters of Persona 4. They've been replaced by the Persona 5 characters.
I'm going to really enjoy playing Persona Arena.
Yeah, now that I know the context,
who these characters are and their personalities and such.
Completing Persona 5 made me want to go back and complete Persona 4 because it wasn't that far off it. But there's also an anime. So if you would just like to watch the anime and learn the story, I think it's like 20 episodes or something like that, it will give you the main plot beats without because the dungeon exploring and all that jazz.
The cutscenes are very high standard within the game, I think.
Yes, they are. And then
The anime.
The anime is by the same studio that did the cutscenes, I think, and then it is longer. I think they're also going to do Persona 5 as an anime, but I'm not too sure on that.
Yeah.
But, yeah,
It looks great on the Vita screen, I must say, as well. Nice high-resolution way of playing it.
Yes,
isn't it?
Because
I guess the PS2 one wasn't as high resolution.
Well, no, of course not, because, I mean, it's a PS2 game at the end of the day.
But I think it's a good way to play it on the Vita, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's generally where I like to play RPGs. It was what I was feeling with Persona 5 was, man, I really wish this was on Switch. Because, like I said, I almost beat I Am Setsuna in one sitting. I feel the same way you do. That I think, to be honest with you, after I beat Persona 5, I was like, I think maybe I'm done with JRPGs. I don't know if the time I invested in this for the story I got was wise time spent. Mm. You know, I don't feel I got the 80 hours worth. Like, I mean, I enjoyed it. It was super fun. Yeah.
How would you compare it to something that's very story-driven like a Yakuza? Is Yakuza a better story?
I think so. Yeah. I think maybe I've grown old. Maybe I think it's a different kind of story, and I think it's more in line with films I really like, Infernal Affairs and this kind of stuff.
I'm really looking for that in video games now. Finding a video game that has the ability to tell a really good story.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky enough to have played something like Persona 4 or some other games I'm playing recently, which are showing me that there is the potential to do that within a video game.
There definitely is.
And I'm sure there's a billion different examples. It's just my experience of JRPGs, at least, have been meh.
Well, mostly. See, the thing is, right, JRPGs, the reason I absolutely love the genre of JRPGs is because that's what JRPGs used to be.
Yeah.
They used to be the game with a story.
Yes.
And that story used to always be incredible, like Final Fantasy VI, Final Fantasy VII.
Uh-huh.
Earlier games in some other series, like Illusion of Gaia, you have Chrono Trigger, is one of the best stories I've ever experienced in a video game. And they were gripping. They told you things, and you went through them, and you're like, wow, this is incredible.
But for every great story, there's another JRPG which really is a little bit more run-of-the-mill.
There is,
and
I mean,
there's so many of them.
You know, like, as much as I really enjoyed playing Final Fantasy XV, that story was not on par with something like a Final Fantasy VI. Like, you know, I bought that game boxed because that game, like, even picking up the Magitek armor, like I said, from the art near the Square Enix cafe, I heard Terra's theme in my head, and I thought about you going to Narsh over the
memories.
Things. I was like, man, that's such a fucking good game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I think playing I Am Setsuna, which is a game that tries very much to be this classic RPG, that's the reason that Tokyo RPG Factory, the developers, were bought by Square and put together to make games like this,
yeah,
is that the game is very much trying to be a cross between Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI. And it succeeds in the combat. It succeeds in how fast the story is and how it moves and the dungeon styles and things. It's just gone under the heart, though. It feels like it was put together to be something like this. And I mean, Bravely Default was a game that I was like, okay, this game's got a pretty interesting story. I care about these characters in the same way that I did in Final Fantasy IV about people. Like, and then it just it drags on way too long. And it's like, okay, cool. I'll do this thing with the crystals 4 times to get the proper ending to this game. This isn't annoying that I have to repeat the same 4 dungeons 3 times to do something. It's just like, no, I'm good. I'm done with this game. I don't need to know the end of the story if this is how you're going to choose to make me get there. But I think, honestly, like, playing Yakuza, like, I put Yakuza 2 on yesterday after I beat I Am Setsuna because I was like, I really like this game. It's good. It's a good 7 out of 10. Like, it's not... It didn't blow me away in the way I kind of hoped it would, and everyone had raved about this game being like, oh my god, it's Chrono Trigger meets Final Fantasy VI. But it isn't, because it's not got the heart.
Heart, very important.
And then I played Yakuza 2 this morning, and like, the first hour of that game is essentially an amazingly written story, and then you go through... Like, there's the option to reminisce on Yakuza 1, and I was just like, okay, I can remember, like, the rough story beats of what happened in those times. So I played about 10 games that were pretty lengthy since I beat Yakuza 1. And it was like, you just heard about Yumi, and you heard about Nishiki, and all these characters are in this game, and all the events, and you're like, oh yeah, shit, I forgot that happened. Oh yeah, God, this happened as well. And I'm like, man, I love Yakuza 1. Yakuza 1 is probably one of my favourite, if not my favourite game of all time. Like, even watching those cutscenes is like, man, I really want to play Yakuza 1 again.
I can't remember anyone's names from when I started playing Zero.
Really?
Yet. But you know the premise of Zero.
Yeah, it's set before.
Yeah, set before. The first one. The first thing that happens is you're tempted by... Well, you're not tempted by it, it's Loan Shark's trying to say, you don't want to be a Yakuza. It's much easier to just work for me and money, but he's very like, I'm going to be a Yakuza, you know, following this. And then you meet your friend, and you introduce all the different aspects of the game, and he tells you got to dress smart, and you need to get change your clothes, and then you've killed somebody in an alley. And that's not a good thing, because when they find out, your bosses find out that you've killed somebody, that's when the story... picks
stuff
up and starts
happens
going somewhere.
Because then it starts giving this implication that you kill a loan shark, right?
You don't kill the loan shark, you kill the guy owing the loan shark.
And then it builds up because you shouldn't have killed him because he's someone of importance. Blah, blah, blah. It roughly touches upon some of the things that... right, I have an important question for you.
Okay.
Is the main character called Kiryu or Kazuma?
Kiryu, I think. Yeah.
Because his name is Kazuma Kiryu in Persona 1. Yakuza 1.
Yeah.
And then in Yakuza 2, because it's all Japanese, I kind of miss some of the voices, to be honest with you. I kind of miss Mark Hamill. They say Kazuma in the subtitles, but they say Kiryu, which is his name in the voiceovers. Yes. And I think they corrected that because I think they did the weird thing of calling him Kazuma Kiryu in the first Yakuza game. But in Japanese, you refer to people as... You would refer to him as Kazuma Kiryu, but it would be like me calling you Parry Tom. Nah. It's the other way around.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm kind of glad they corrected that. But like, I like the name Kazuma. And then... one of your bosses, Omokun, from the first game, his name is actually Kazuma.
Oh.
And so it keeps saying Kazuma in the Japanese voiceover, and I'm like, oh, okay, they're talking about Obosun. Like, it's fine, don't worry about it. And then they keep saying Kiryu's name. And they would say Kiryu every now and again in the first Yakuza game, and it didn't make any sense because the character's name was Kazuma. Yeah. But it was like, people would call him, like, Kiryu-chan.
One thing I will say about...
Sam, even not Chan's girls.
Yep. Yakuza Zero is, you know, I I have played the fighting system in Yakuza 1 before, but since then I've played a few of these. There's a lot of fighting games like this on the PS2.
Yeah.
Final Fight Streetwise, Beatdown Fists of Vengeance, and Urban Reign.
Yeah.
Urban Reign by Namco is, I think, the best example of a 3D brawler.
Yeah.
And it's even better than Yakuza 0.
Yeah.
Is, I think Yakuza 0 doesn't feel that fluid as a fighting system.
I think Yakuza 0 is built up so much from what I played of it when I was like, oh man, I played Yakuza 0 at like EGX or wherever it was.
Yeah.
I think there's so much tacked on to what Yakuza 1 and Yakuza 2 do.
Yeah.
In terms of like the stances and all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
And
it's very basic in what I've experienced in Yakuza 0.
Yeah. Like from what I played, it was further on in the game and there seemed like a lot piled on top of it.
Oh, maybe there's more to come then. Because I can do strikes and a heavy strike and I can grab people and throw them or pick
You can press square to punch people, you can press triangle for a heavy and then circle to throw.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it doesn't tack on too much then.
Basically.
Yeah.
But it feels nowhere near as fluid as Urban Reign does. Mm-hmm. I also like Beatdown Fist of Vengeance, I think, is a little bit overlooked as well. I don't know how much you know about that game.
I do not. But if you're telling me that the combat system is very similar to Yakuza, then I might pick them up.
But
is the story any good,
though? Weapons off each other. I don't know about the story because I skipped all the cutscenes.
Ah, fuck my life, Tom Parry.
I wanted to play the game, you know. I was talking about it on Paris Pickups, and, you know, I was thought, like, well, I concentrate on the gameplay here. But it also includes characters which look like famous Hollywood actors.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
There's Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
And there's the guy in Reservoir Dogs.
Michael Madsen?
Yes. The police officer arrested you. Looks, it's like him. It's like exactly him. Maybe a bit fatter.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of that in that game. It's a very intriguing game to me. It's actually got more of a story than Urban Reign has, but Urban Reign's got the better combat system. I thought I'd mention that. It's kind of related to Yakuza.
You got these games in Denmark?
No, I'm afraid
I
haven't.
I would like to have tried them.
Yeah, I could not bring much back. Well, I had to bring stuff I needed to bring back with me this time.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Those are t-shirts.
God damn it, Parry. You only need t-shirts.
I did get a KISS t-shirt, didn't I?
Of course you did.
Yeah. I got this really cool Sonic t-shirt as well. Yeah, I'm wearing it in one of the videos.
Yeah?
Yeah. Mike's also got the same one. It's a very minimalist design where you've got like a stripe across here, but it's Sonic running, but it's very simple.
Yeah.
And then he's picking up some rings.
Yeah. Uniqlo at the moment has a lot of Nintendo t-shirts, and I noticed there were lots and lots of people wearing them in Tokyo, so I went to Uniqlo to try and get them.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the good ones are for women. There's a very nice Pikmin t-shirt that I was like, wow, I would have bought that, but
and
it's for
kids,
ladies.
I think. I was trying to code you about that. And
kids,
a friend
weirdly,
of ours,
in the States and in the UK, in Japan, all of them were for everyone. There was a Life Has No Reset button, Mr. Rossetti t-shirt that I was very tempted by.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm probably not going to wear it that much, though, so I left it, which is a shame. I really regret not buying it. I almost bought a fucking Parappa of the Rapper t-shirt, Tom,
in
a Parappa of the Rapper pop-up shop.
Yeah.
I convinced myself, after talking with
you gotta believe,
the missus,
man.
That I didn't need this Parappa of the Rapper t-shirt because I have lots of t-shirts, and then I put it down, and then I needed to buy something on a card anyway, so I thought, fuck it, I'm gonna get it. And a woman in front of me had just like I'd hidden it under a thing.
Oh no.
And she picked it up because she'd seen me hide it. And it was the last one because the Parappa shop was shutting down the next
day.
I did not believe Tom and I was not rewarded for it. I did play the demo of Parappa the Rapper though, and it made me feel better. I kicked, punched, and chop kick blocked.
Yeah, good. I got something for spending so much on the PlayStation. I got a voucher, I might have mentioned that, and I got Parappa with that. And yeah. Fun to play it again. We talked about Parappa,
we
didn't
have.
We?
I bought a Japanese copy of Parappa because the box looked really nice.
Oh, the PS4 one?
No, the PS1 one.
Oh, right.
I don't think it's out on PS4 physically.
It is somewhere in Asia, I think.
I hope it's
you
not
can
in
get
Japan,
a physical one.
Shit, I didn't see that.
In I don't think it's Japan. I think it's one of the other.
Oh, it's
Asian
probably
countries.
Like an Asian release.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Fair enough. Yeah. Any more for any more?
Oh, there probably is, but I think we've. I think we've probably.
We have.
What am I trying to? What word am I trying to look for there?
Finish the podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
I believe
that
is the words
it.
You're looking for. Yeah. Okay.
We covered a lot of ground.
We did.
We don't want to spoil you too much.
Sorry, it's a bit of a tangent podcast rather than talking about
it's
games.
It's been a fun tangent podcast.
It has, yeah, I think so.
I hope you've also enjoyed the podcast. It's been a while since we've done it.
It has.
We put the podcast hats back on now.
Exactly. Next week we'll be more structured. We'll have notes again and we'll talk about like what we've been buying and what we've been playing
but
properly.
I haven't spoken to Matt properly for 3 weeks.
No, exactly. So this is more a general glimpse of a conversation between me and Tom Parry. Because we do talk at length about this stuff sometimes. Okay, cool and the gang. If you've liked this podcast, remember that you can find us in a variety of places, such as on blastprocess.com. Find us on YouTube on the Blast Process Facebook page, the Blast Process YouTube channel, where you can see Parry's pickups and see some of the games that Tom has been buying and playing.
Out the Retro Duo review as well.
You can check out some of my stuff on Biographic. I did a review of Sensei Bishoujo R Sailor Moon before
Wonderful.
I went.
Yeah,
well you done. Liked it?
No, I just like you saying that.
Me saying it.
I did, yes, not that I didn't like it.
Yeah. See, we're rusty as hell. I apologize, I haven't done this in a while. You can find us on Twitter, TMA Cast. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at the same places. Not that we've ever used the Instagram in like 7 years.
Oh, yeah, we've got an Instagram.
We have got an Instagram, yeah.
The Blast Process Instagram, though, is regularly updated.
Yes.
So that's probably worth checking out.
And, yeah, you can find us on iTunes while you're there. Give us a cheeky rate and subscribe if you don't already. Encourage others to listen to the podcast, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to go because I really need to use the toilet, which is very distracting from what I'm doing right now. So until next week, everybody out there, I think it's fair to say, Tom Parry.
What's that?
Game on.
Oh, yeah, game on.